The governor names a drug task force. Was he slow to react? Senator Donnelly continues his push for a federal drug task force. What's the holdup there? Poll results in the race for mayor of Indianapolis, the Blue Indy launch, and Deflategate. That plus Venus Williams graduates from IU East and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 4, 2015. Programming
is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Governor Mike Pence named a 21-member drug task force. He's motivated by the 152 heroin overdose deaths that have taken place in Indiana so far this year. 10 years ago, there were just 13. The governor acted by executive order, creating the task force that includes lawmakers, judges, doctors, and police officers. They will focus on three areas: law enforcement, addiction treatment, and drug prevention. It can spend $10 million this year and $20 million next year. Here's the governor.
I'm calling on the members of this task force to answer the question starting today: how can we maximize all existing resources and look for new opportunities to develop a comprehensive new statewide approach to combat drug abuse?
I don't know how much it's going to cost to save Hoosiers' lives, but whatever it takes, it's worth it, because I don't want mothers and fathers to have to bury their children like I did.
And that's social justice advocate Sharon Blair. Is the drug task force overdue? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Pete Seat, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is this task force needed?
Oh, it's obviously needed. It was needed a long time ago. I mean, the governor's been, again, asleep at the switch. He goes from crisis to scandal, and that's how he governs. I mean, for example, on the HIV outbreak down in Scott County, that you had an outbreak when you had 10 cases. He didn't act until there were 79 documented cases. Those 65 days could have made a difference for a lot of lives. I'm glad he's finally doing something, and we've got to put money in prevention and also in economic development in those areas, because one thing, or the lack of economic development, feeds the drug use. But the problem we've got here is...
But it's a statewide problem.
It's a statewide problem, but it's also concentrated in pockets around the state. And those pockets are the ones where there's very little opportunity.
Connersville, Anderson,
and
Scott County.
When we get to the second question, we can talk about the statewide aspect of that. But I'm glad he's finally doing something. I just wish he had done it 2 years ago.
Should he have acted sooner?
I think you can always act sooner when it comes to saving people's lives. It's never soon enough. One person dying from a drug overdose is one person too many. But what's unfortunate in what Ann said and others is the partisanship in this issue shouldn't be there. This is a bipartisan issue. We need parents and families and communities to come together to fix this problem, which is not just a statewide problem, but a national problem. And the Indiana Democratic Party put out a statement before the governor even finished his press conference, blasting him at a time when we need to come together. They just wanted to play political games.
You know, you don't want to play political games, but you want to point out the fact of the matter. Yes, it's a nationwide problem, but it's particularly acute in this state. And the Republicans have been in control in this state for 12 years and ignored the problem. And now you want to say everybody needs to come together without any criticism, because you don't want people to focus on what you haven't done.
Well, this state is 16th in the country in terms of overdose deaths.
Yeah.
There's
That's
a problem.
That's a lot.
Oh, yeah, there's a problem. There's a national problem, and there's a problem here. And a lot of it has to do with the abuse of prescription medications, which is an issue that is a relatively new development in the past few decades. But it is dangerous probably to try to suggest that this is a partisan issue or to point for either party to point and say X or Y should have done this sooner, because this announcement rang a bell. And I went back and confirmed my memory, and almost 26 years ago, almost to the week, then-Governor Evan Bayh, for whom Ann used to work, under pressure from narcotics officers across the state, saying that his administration wasn't doing enough to combat the growing problem of substance abuse in Indiana, had created a gubernatorial task force. Now, in that case, it was 15 members.
Yeah.
I guess inflation
and
pushes up to 21.
We didn't have the deaths
But it was the same sort of thing. And we didn't have, you know, the OxyContin in the same sort of progression to heroin. But I guess the point is, sadly, I'm guessing if we look in 26 years, in some sense, Indiana and other states will be battling some of these same problems, because it is cyclical and it's just so deeply rooted, the problem.
So are these task forces effective?
Well, I think they can be. And they will be effective. The way to judge that is if, when they're finished with this prospect or this timeline, and hopefully it will be fairly quick, they will have solid recommendations, and that the state will then follow through on those recommendations, so that the state does what it needs to do, local government needs to do what it needs to do, and you can address these problems seriously and with resources, because otherwise it will be a lot for nothing, and that will be how you can measure whether it's successful.
And you've got to put more of the resources and energy into prevention, because 99% of the money spent on drug control, so to speak, is spent after the addiction hits, not on prevention.
Still with this, Senator Joe Donnelly filed legislation last year to create a federal drug task force. It didn't get a hearing. This year, he tried again, and Congresswoman Susan Brooks filed companion legislation in the House. It's why Donnelly and Brooks conducted a roundtable discussion at IUPUI. They are seeking ways to convince doctors to prescribe pain medication less often. They point out that 80% of heroin users start out on prescription drugs. Their task force would be separate from the governor's, and Attorney General Greg Zeller already has a task force in place. Here is Senator Donnelly, followed by Representative Brooks.
There are not going to be three different stovepipes. We're willing to work together in any way, shape, or form that we can.
The issue of substance abuse, it's a chronic disease, and we need to be treating it in large part like a disease. And in fact, overdose deaths have just overtaken traffic fatalities as the top incident of death among young people in our country and in our state.
Pete Seat, why can't they get a hearing in Congress?
Well, in the Senate, if you look up the word dysfunction in the dictionary, you'll see a picture of the United States Senate. That's your answer there. In the U.S. House, they have had hearings on these issues, not on the particular legislation that Brooks is putting forward. But what's good about having
including Susan, one hearing where the state health commissioner testified.
Correct. And what's good about having Susan Brooks on this is, one, her experience. When she was deputy mayor of Indianapolis, the issue was crack. When she was U.S. attorney, the issue was meth, and it still is in some cases. And now she's on the Energy and Commerce Committee, arguably one of the most powerful committees in Congress, where she can help push this forward. As we've all said, it's a local issue, a state issue, a national issue, and it cuts across demographic and racial lines. And I hope she's able to push it through.
Well, and in this case, you have a Republican and a Democrat working together.
Yeah, because it's a worthwhile task. Their function or their approach seems to be more on talking to doctors about the prescriptions for pain-killing medication, because that's how this starts. And when you look at all the charts nationally, Indiana is ahead of the national average on the use of every single major painkiller. Now, I can't believe that all of our population is either so sick or in so much pain. I think something else is going on, and it needs to be addressed. Doctors have to be aware that users of these substances graduate into heroin abusers and wind up with overdoses, and we've got to do something about it. I applaud both of them for their actions.
Well, in the governor's case, in the case of these folks, they're all calling for a new approach, and what they're saying is we need more treatment and less incarceration, but the system isn't set up for that.
No, it's not, and that's a fundamental shift that's going to have to occur, and if it does, that will be better for the whole system, because putting people in prison we've seen that putting people in prison does not get them the help that they need to break the addiction, to get over what it is that's causing them this problem. So if you can put those resources into treatment programs that they can use to get over the problem and then get on with their productive lives. That'll be a better resource. But it's a lot harder to do, and politicians are loath to make that kind of transition because they're afraid at the ballot box.
Well, politicians and policemen. I mean, it's you know, when you encounter a drug user, a drug abuser, it's, you know, do you take them to jail or where do you take them? Right now there's not any place.
There's no other place at the moment.
And when you have horrible crimes that are related to drugs, I mean, it's understandable why elected officials sensitive to public pressure would say lock them up and throw away the key. And I will say, if I recall what I remember sitting through 26 years ago with some of those meetings with the Evan Bayh task force versus now, there does seem to be a greater capacity at this point for the notion of treatment and the medical aspect of this than the law enforcement aspect. But the key is, how long is that sustainable? Because there will be these horrible instances where there's going to be a temptation to say, this is the kind of person we need to lock up
for decades. The message this week is you can't arrest your way out of this.
Right.
And we've tried that. For 30 years we've tried that. And we have more people incarcerated in this country as a percentage of the population than anywhere else in the world, for goodness sake, maybe with the possible exception of Russia and China. But, you know what I mean in terms of crimes. And nobody's saying if somebody on drugs commits a violent crime, they shouldn't go to prison.
Right.
They should. But we are locking people up simply for possessing and using drugs. And those are the very people that John's right need to be taken out of the criminal justice system. And politicians need to have enough backbone to get up there and say that.
Well, if you look at Justice Department statistics, I think the figure, it's upwards of 70, maybe close to 80% recidivism rate for people who are incarcerated in terms of drug, substance abuse-related crimes. The likelihood that they are statistically will be back behind bars, again, 75%+.
Right.
I agree.
Right. Jail, overdose, or recovery are really your only three options.
That's right.
All right. The Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce and the Metropolitan Indianapolis Board of Realtors released portions of a Marion County poll this week in advance of the mayoral election. Among other things, it shows Mayor Greg Ballard has a 66% approval rating. Governor Pence has an approval rating of just 35 in Marion County, and his disapproval number is 59. RFRA is a big factor. 65% of those polled believe it had a negative effect on Indiana. John Katzenberger, even people who want a religious freedom law think RFRA hurt Indiana. What do you make of that?
Well, I make of it that the incident that occurred during the session is still resonating with people. And, you know, we have to remember that this is a Marion County poll. It's not a statewide poll. But I think if you look around at what's going on in a lot of communities, several communities have addressed this issue. Some have passed ordinances. Some have not passed ordinances.
Including Columbus this week, which is the governor's hometown.
That's right. And so the RFRA issue remains very resonant. And I think that's the message you take back from this. And that's important because there's a lot of time between when the RFRA debacle occurred and the next election cycle. And so to be able to sustain that, the opponents will have to maintain the resonance, and they've done that so far.
Well, it's maybe dangerous to draw a straight line between these three results, but Greg Ballard's a Republican. This is a Democratic county. 66% approve of what he's doing. And you know, this number of 53% are opposed to RFRA, yet 65% think it's done harm. So that's the essence of the governor's problem here, is that people didn't like the way he handled this, even if they agree with his ideology.
I think that's probably right. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed, really, Jim, to find somebody who, once administered truth serum, would say that the debate and the way that unfolded nationally was not a negative for the state of Indiana. In fact, the governor has said as much. Now, he'll say that it was misunderstood, that it was spun in a way that it was not intended. But the consequences are the consequences, and that was a black eye for the state of Indiana. So, I see where you're coming from. I think that probably is responsible in Marion County for some of the, for at least a large portion of the low approval rating for the governor. On the flip side, I'm not sure necessarily that alone is what accounts for Greg Ballard's 66% approval rating. I mean, I'm sure it's a factor, but I think It's right. It's more of a drain on the governor than it is an upside
for
the mayor.
Well, and he's not running again, which is, people think kindly.
And one of the lessons here may be that Greg Ballard should have run again.
Maybe, but I'm not sure that it would be 66% if he were in the middle of the campaign either.
Well, that's probably true. Should Mike Pence be concerned about these numbers?
Well, they're discouraging, sure, but it's one out of 92 counties. So,
it's the biggest out of 92.
Sure, counties. But there's still 91 other counties. He's running statewide. He's not running for mayor of Indianapolis. He's running for governor of the state of Indiana. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of time, as John said, between now and then. And I think time does heal all wounds, and we'll get past this. I also think that people in this state feel a lot worse about RFRA and its effects than people outside of the borders of Indiana. And I've seen this in travels. It doesn't resonate outside of Indiana, that people aren't remembering it. We're seeing it with the job creation numbers. In the last 2 weeks, over 1,000 jobs announced in the state. And it feels a lot worse when the spotlight is on you than it does outside.
Of course, they don't vote when they don't live in Indiana. And he should be concerned
about
this.
But we're basing that perception on how other people view us.
Yeah.
No, I think you're wrong about that. And I don't think the job numbers have anything to do with it. On this particular thing, he has to be concerned because the people have formed an opinion of him. And that's a sharp contrast from when the first time he ran. He was kind of a generic Republican, okay? And everybody was, as the state generally does, prepared to go Republican. They've now formed an opinion of him, and it's a negative opinion. And you not only have to change that opinion, but get them to be positive. And it's not simply RFRA. I mean, we just had one highway collapse into the Ohio River today. And we have what I said before, we're supposed to be the crossroads of America and Hoosier Hospitality, and he's undermined both of them.
There are 91 other counties, as Pete suggests, and that would matter if there were some sort of electoral college system where every county got, say, two votes or something. It ain't that. It's a popular vote statewide. So being the most populous county does matter, and that is a problem, I think, for the governor.
Moving on. Blue Indy launched this week. It's an electric car sharing program and a controversial pet project of Mayor Greg Ballard. The city invested $60 million in the program. Eventually, there will be 500 Blue Indy cars on the roads. The cost to you depends on the plan you choose. Here's Bob Briggs of Blue Indy.
For an annual membership, for a yearly membership, it's $9.99 a month, so $120 a year. And then the rate is $4 a flat fee for the first 20 minutes, and then 20 cents a minute thereafter.
I mean, what do you say to taxi cab drivers who say you're taking my job away?
I haven't heard that.
We just did.
I haven't heard that. I don't think this is a competition for taxi cab drivers. It's a point-to-point service.
Mayor Greg Ballard there. John Schwanes, will Blue Indy fly?
I'm probably the wrong person to there you go, ask. I didn't think Uber and Lyft would work. I'm still trying to understand the concept. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts here in terms of the spaces that have been dedicated to this, the fee structure, the notion that this is potentially encroaching on cab territory, although I haven't heard that argument much either. I think anything that gets to a more energy efficient solution to commuting, especially on short distances in the core of Indianapolis, is probably long-term a good thing, but it sure has kicked up a lot of dust in the short term.
Is this the way of the future?
I don't think it's the way of the future, but it's probably part of a comprehensive transportation plan. I'll give it that much. And I will give it its props as a notion, as an idea, as a concept, because I think it's not a bad concept. But the institution, the installation of this concept has been very bad. From the time it went through the council to the rolling it out and taking the spaces from prime locations to the cost, which is higher than many people thought it might be, to really the lack of information about how it works until it was actually live. The rollout has been very difficult, very rough, and I think there's a large learning curve for this concept, which is admittedly good, to actually become successful, and I'm not sure it can make that.
Have Democrats tried to obstruct this?
I don't know if they've tried to obstruct it, but I think there are a lot of questions about it. That's $60 million. It's not chump change to invest. I know the company's invested a lot more, and I know that concepts like this work in other communities, but they're generally communities that are not as car-dependent as we are. I mean, it would make sense in a city like New York if you wanted to go out to Jones Beach or something and you don't own a car. Here, if you're staying downtown or living downtown and don't want a car or don't want a second car, I could see where you'd use it but they're all over my neighborhood, and I don't see anybody walking up there to get that car to take it to another location, and then I just don't see that working. So the jury's still out, but I will tell you that a lot of prime parking places have been used by this now, and there's a lot of angst in different areas of the city about that.
There's some people who are saying they're going to move out of their neighborhoods because of it. I mean, there is some overreaction here.
Sure, there is on every story these days, right? Thanks, social media.
Blame the press.
Yeah,
blame
right.
Social media.
Bad Jim. I've already seen people in these cars. Maybe they're stunt doubles. I don't know. But I think people are actually excited about it, predominantly millennials, who want to shed the car, want to shed the expenses, and enjoy living in the core of the city. I mean, look at the bike share program and the success of that. There are people constantly riding those things around. Sometimes it's hard to find them because so many people are using them at any given time.
But the price is a lot easier to bear on the bike share, and it's exercise.
Of course, if you think this is expensive, wait till the driverless technology makes this obsolete in 5 years, and then they got to replace everybody, and then I'll really be confused about sitting in the back seat by myself and letting this thing drive me around. But
will we ever get anybody to ride the bus in this city?
Well, I think a lot of people do ride the bus, and we need a regular public transit. I thought we've needed rail for a long time, and I still think we do.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, does the Blue Indy service make sense? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, time will tell. Last week's question, is a drag show an appropriate way to raise campaign funds? 55% said yes, 45% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. A federal judge erased Tom Brady's 4-game suspension this week. U.S. District Judge Richard Berman criticized NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell and said the league went too far in punishing the star quarterback of the New England Patriots. He was accused of using a deflated football in a playoff game against the Indianapolis Colts. The NFL will appeal. Pete Seat, does this reflect badly on the Colts?
No, I mean, they called out an infraction when they saw one. I think this whole thing reflects badly on the NFL and the fact that they don't know how to punish their players appropriately. Go back to Adrian Peterson and others that have happened where
this
they got
the
a slap on the wrist.
This is the fifth case in a row that they've lost in court,
yeah,
right?
Well, they get a slap on the wrist, and then now it's a 4-game suspension against Brady. Maybe a few games too many, but at some point someone needs to be made an example. And I thought it was a joke when Roger Goodell said this hurts the integrity of the game. What hurts the integrity of the game is his commissionership.
Well, I was surprised, you know.
Here go your season tickets.
Well, yeah, Tom Brady clearly, by all the evidence, was attempting to cheat against the Colts, and yet you have Colts players reacting to this ruling by saying it's good for the players.
I mean, they have to play against them too, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing about it is, you know, it may put the state of Indiana in play for the general election because he's so close to Trump. You know, maybe we'll get a backlash vote. The fact of the matter is, the only thing that this tells you about the entire operation is that the players have darn good lawyers negotiating those arbitration provisions in their contracts.
Well, and I think that's why the Colts players are pleased with the outcome, not necessarily because of the allegations of cheating, but,
right, but because
it's
there
a
is
big
protected
victory
as well
for the players. That's exactly right. And what the judge found was the NFL was making up its punishment as it goes along. And, you know, the NFL won big in the collective bargaining agreement, but they've lost every case since.
Right.
And you can bet that the players' union, when the next contract comes up in 2020, is going to be working that very hard.
Sure. I just think, though, that the spin that we're seeing, at least elsewhere, I don't get it, the notion that this is somehow an exoneration.
The Patriots already agreed to fines and punishments for others. They agreed that
I must have
a
minority view here. I think this is still a black eye as much as it was before. This was decided, had nothing to do with whether the balls were tampered with or not. This is a labor law issue. I mean, simple as that. It's a procedural call.
Right.
So the notion that everybody's, you know, raising, pumping their fists and saying, Tom Brady, see, his image had been tarnished, has nothing to do with this decision at all.
No, his image is still tarnished.
Right,
he'll
I would agree.
Finally, tennis superstar Venus Williams is now an Indiana University East graduate. Excuse me. Williams was presented with her diploma in Richmond on August 14th. She took online courses to earn her Bachelor of Science in Business Administration Williams has been taking classes at IU East since 2011. Ann Delaney, does that speak well for the educational options available in Indiana?
Oh, I think it's great. I think it's great for IU East, and she deserves a lot of credit with her schedule, the fact that she could do this online or not, and then make the time to come to the graduation. I think it's a terrific message to send to young kids.
Yeah, it's a great example.
Absolutely. For young people in this country and around the world that look to her, she set a very good example.
She previously got an online degree in fashion
design from a Florida university, and so she's followed up. I'm waiting to see where she's going to get her MBA.
She tells me she's going to be on the cover of some recruiting brochures for the Richmond campus of IU.
Good for them.
Just a crazy guess on my part.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Pete Seat, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.